Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Welcome. It's another gorgeous, foggy Saturday afternoon.
See, that's interesting. You have fog up there. I have a beautiful, sunshiny day going for me down here. It's amazing.
Yes.
It's only, what, 30 miles?
30 miles. Yes, Cliff is in the remote studio in Cottage Grove, and I'm in the main studio here in Eugene, giving the local weather report in case anybody 400 miles away even cares.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, there are probably people in California that have sunny days and people elsewhere that have some cloudy days. So it'll work for anybody that wants to listen to it. And if you look outside and what it's doing is what she's saying, then that's fine.
That's right. Who cares about sunny California?
I do. As a matter of fact, I like sunny California.
Anyways, what I like is to welcome everybody to the program and invite them if you'd like to join us live right now. You can do so by dialing 646-721-9887. You can also join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. And if you happen to be listening to the program after we're live on the archives, as always, we invite you to send your emails to talk@krbnradio.com. Got a lot going on and a lot of exciting things happening in the future. And one of them, I'd like to invite people. We have, last week, we had on an interview with Ms. Jo Rae Perkins, who is running for U.S. Senate on the Republican side. And Ms. Perkins has graciously offered to come on the program from time to time and answer your questions. So if you have any questions that you would like us to forward on to her so she can answer, please do so. You can send us an email, talk@caribbeanradio.com. You can also visit her website, by the way, perkinsforussenate.com, and check her out on Facebook as well. And don't hesitate. If there's a lot going on and if you have any questions, send it to her, send it to us, and we'll get her to answer some of them on the air. So it's all exciting. And otherwise, what else we got going on is I'm going to talk a little bit about the Senate again. Speaking of Senate, if nobody heard recently, they passed a $1.1 trillion spending bill. And we also going to talk a little bit about the Benghazi debacle, where the question of what did the president do when our ambassadors were under attack? Well, the report came out to actually say what happened. Your turn.
Oh, well, basically, it's you said it all. As far as what the president did, he just ignored it. I mean, the thing is, I guess I have to, what do I want to say? Give him a little bit of a pass because so much stuff happens and it means nothing. But the thing is, we've got so many things going on. And when he did find out, for example, that in one instance we killed a person was murdered or killed, and for many others injured, and he just ignored that. I mean, the guy doesn't seem to have a idea of what to ignore and what not to ignore. He just ignores everything. I don't know.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that according to the report that recently came out, is when Benghazi was under attack, that the president was told at the time that it was a terrorism attack, and he was so concerned about it that he went to bed and then went on a campaign tour directly afterwards, which is really comforting that this is the way that our commander-in-chief and president, the big guy in the White House, takes care of our people and how seriously he takes everything.
Well, now the thing is, so what did you expect him to do? I mean, what was he supposed to do? He couldn't physically do anything about it. He wasn't there. It wouldn't do him any good to get in an airplane and fly over there. If I was him, I would put all of my trust in the commanders that I have commanding the troops over there, that they would doing the right thing, which means that you have nothing to do, which is exactly what he did.
Nothing. So he did what was expected of him.
Well, I don't know if he did what was expected of him. I guess people seem to think that the commander-in-chief, if anything comes to your attention, that you lay awake and think about it, or at least sit there in front of in your desk and hand on the phone waiting for a phone call or something. I don't know. I don't think it's that imperative. I think this was much, we found out later, this is much more important than it was at the time that I think he received the phone call.
Well, according to the reports, he received the phone call either as it happened or right before it happened. And they were aware of the unrest in the area, but in either case, he was informed that day, but yet the news media and the announcements from the White House was, well, this is just unrest because of a video, and, you know, it wasn't really a terrorist attack.
That video thing, see, this is the thing, we get in trouble when we start talking about this, because all we have to go by is by the media. And you just got misled there, because the video thing actually didn't come up until 24 hours after he was informed of what was going on. The video thing was brought up later as an excuse, and it was nothing more than an excuse, and it was obvious that it was just, I don't want to say made up, because it wasn't made up, but it wasn't brought up until after the fact.
Right.
Considerably after the fact. I mean, I don't know who brought up this video idea, because even after they brought it up and were talking about it, some people were saying that's a bunch of malarkey, and even whole countries were saying that was a bunch of malarkey, but other countries were accepting it as gospel. So, we really don't know what took place at this particular time. This story that's happening now may be adding more to our knowledge than any of them before. But this is what, a year later?
Well, even being a year later, I mean, let's look at the big picture. I mean, okay, it was reported to the president that it was actually a terrorist attack. Then this is the way he handles it. Well, what if it turned out to escalate? I mean,
that's the thing. You know, if they reported it as a terrorist attack, we don't know exactly when he went to bed. I mean, he may have stayed up and waited for some information. He may have not. He may have gone to bed immediately. We do know the next day he went campaigning,
right?
And that's, I think, he shouldn't have done that. But on the same token, is he sitting around waiting for something that isn't coming in yet? But, you know, the thing is, what else does he have to do? He doesn't have to campaign. That's the one thing. That's the least of his worries.
You know, people died in that embassy because of the lack of because the president didn't give the orders to defend it. I mean, the help was there. People wanted to get in there to help out. And they couldn't do it because they didn't get the authorization from the White House to do it.
Okay, that's one thing. They didn't have the help, is the word I'll use. They didn't have the personnel that they should have had right from the beginning.
Right.
They didn't have the people there protecting them that they should have had from the beginning. And who's that? That's partly, Hillary's idea, Hillary's problem, and she was involved in that. And there were a couple other people. The CIA was involved in that. They didn't do it. It was a bunch of mistakes. And the thing is, have we done anything to fix all these problems at all. I mean, there's got to be a lot more of this going on in the country. That's why I say to hell with all of it. Let's just get the hell out of everywhere.
Right.
Let's not be there. There's no reason we need to be there and spend that much money and that much time and that many lives, which is what we're doing. That's the most important thing. We're having Americans killed in places that they don't need to be, and they don't need to be there at all.
Exactly.
So we need to bring them home, and if we want to, we can still spend the money on supporting them by putting them on our border and putting them in other places. I mean, but the thing is, we've got to get out of this business of trying to control the world. Now, on the same token, there are some instances where I can see that it is important that we do make our points of view known, but not nearly, I think, as much as we do.
Well, I agree, and you know, a lot of it is based on our leadership and having the king in the White House leading such a royal lifestyle, so to speak. As you said many times before, he's not qualified. You know, when something really happens, he's not qualified to take the leadership role. I mean, he's enjoying the hobnobbing with the stars and getting out there and doing his speeches, and I'm sure that after his term is up that, you know, he's going to make tons of money just by writing books and giving speeches and whatever else he's going to do. But other than that, I'm really more convinced than ever that he is just not qualified to be a leader, especially in a crisis.
That's true. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and he is not qualified. He had almost no preparation or qualifications to go into that office. He was put in there. All right, I'm just going to say it. I think he was put in there because he was black, and that's all.
Yeah. Well, it was. I mean, when you get right down to it, they use that as an excuse. I mean, you had videos of children in high school or junior high, you know, singing his praises and, you know, videos of people dancing and coming up with a little rap and saying, you know, we got Obama, da, da, da. And then, but if you say anything, you're a racist.
Well, you know, one of the first things that I would say is the man is from Illinois. That's the story. He's not qualified for anything. No one in Illinois is.
Well, there goes more cards and letters.
I don't believe anybody in Illinois has. I mean, they've all done things that are stupid. They don't have the qualifications. They think they know it all, and they don't know any of it.
Well, we don't know any of it because look what we elected, and the fact that we're not. This is what's really sad, and this is what you know, on my soapbox thing. What I've harped about for a long time, we have a checks and balance system in this place that isn't working. And what we have to do is we have to get people, well, for one thing, we always have to hold our representatives to the fire and make them accountable, because right now they're really not. But on the other side of the coin, I blame a lot of the people, too, for not getting involved because they don't care. What's going on in the world doesn't affect them, and what goes on in the federal government until, like I said, Obamacare doesn't really affect them, so they don't care. So they sit back and they watch their football games, and they watch their TVs and can name, you know, who's on The Price is Right tomorrow and or who won the car last week, but as far as what's really going on in the real world, they don't care.
Oh, boy, how do I answer that? How do I say it? I don't believe they don't all care. I believe most people do care, but it's not the media is not doing a good job of telling them what's happening. They're not – boy, I don't want to – the way – any way I say this, it can make everybody sound stupid, but they don't break it down into base words. They don't – break it down into something everyone can understand.
Well, like you said, the media has been hobnobbing. You know, they're afraid to say anything because, you know, anybody that comes out and criticizes anything, you're a racist. And
That's too bad, Ben. That's because of who we elected.
Well, that, and it's really sad. I mean, it's a political ploy to maintain control. And it's really sad because, you know, when you look at the big picture, historically, you know, we elected a black president. We didn't do it, well, I believe we didn't do it totally because of his color. Yes, some people did do it because of his color. But when you think of it as far as growth of a nation that we, you know, with our history, we actually put a, you know, several black people into office, you know, would be, hey, we've really grown. But instead, what this administration has done was set us back several generations because, you know, if Bush or Clinton or anybody else was in office, and we could say anything and not be critical.
I agree, and I believe we did elect a black president, and we did it too early and for the wrong reasons.
But when is the right reason? When is the right time?
Not now.
Actually,
it is now. We've done it now. We've tried it out. We found out what has happened, and we could do it again, perhaps, and do it better. But the thing is, we didn't pay attention to the right person. There were people there.
You're right in this respect, as far as, you know, for the next candidate that comes out, you know, what we should learn, and we probably won't from this one, is when you have a candidate that comes out that won't tell you about their past, won't answer questions, okay, I'm going to claim birther here, but, you know, where are you from? Where is your transcript? You know, when you're hiding your past, that there is a good sign of something's wrong. But, you know, the salesman who's out there going, well, you know, I can promise you that we'll have a, you know, a turkey in every pot and two cars in your garage, even though they'll be all electric. Should have thrown up some red flags. But even when you, now after the fact, even when you go back, you know, and listen to some of the 2008 interviews with him, the clues were out there. Like even as far as health care goes, both him and Nancy Pelosi said they want a single-payer system. And, well, guess what? We're working towards it. You know, the signs were there. We were blind to it because we wanted to change. Well, we got hope and change. Now we're hoping there's going to be better change.
Yeah, that's it. The thing is, we didn't vet the candidate enough. We didn't pay attention to who he really was. And that's what I'm saying over and over again, is that the American public is sort of content to let the media take care of it all and that way they don't have to pay attention to what's going on. They just read the headlines, and that's all. That's the problem with most of the media, is all they do is read the headlines, and even if it's on television, that's all the television puts on is the headlines. They don't put on in depth anything. And once in a while you can watch Oregon public radio or TV. It's hard to watch public radio. It's not hard to watch. It doesn't do much. But anyway, watch public TV. You can get some background then about some of the people. But even public TV is more interested in playing the nearest orchestra and stuff like that than they are on real news. They only have a couple hours out of 24 of actual news. And then they do, because they only have a couple hours, they hardly do any more than headlines too. So that's our problem. We don't have anybody that's doing the actual in-depth story about what's going on, and consequently, we as the public don't really know.
No,
so,
right. There is no such. In fact, is there even a 60 Minutes anymore?
Yeah, it's there, and they don't spend. I don't think I haven't watched it for a while, but last time I watched it, as I recall, they broke it up into four different stories. So even it's only 15 minutes.
Right. Well, no, you make a good point. And in this day of the fad known as the internet, there's really no excuse to not do your research. And like I always tell people, you know, try to go for the source. Don't just go. Don't rely on just one website like NBC, CBS, or MSNBC, or whatever, because a good example would be like even the New York Times put out a spoof, and they didn't put it out as a spoof. This was a visit that Obama did to Russia, And they spoofed the fact that that Obama insulted Putin. And doing my background research on this, it was showing up that other people, other blogs, other even some news services were echoing this. But when you actually dig down to the source of it, it was actually just the New York Times having fun with it. And people took it, ran it as gospel because it's the New York Times.
Yeah, when anytime you have somebody as big as the New York Times, that's kind of sad that they would do something like that, because people have a tendency to believe them.
Yes, and again, as far as, I'm going to blame the news media again, too. As far as importance, what's the headline news for this weekend? It's Michelle's 50th birthday. Who cares about the fact that what's going on in Congress?
Happy birthday, Michelle.
Yes, and of course, they're having a flashback of all of our best fashions.
Oh, I saw a thing on television where she was playing with a bunch of kids in the lawn, so I didn't see the other part.
See, it's like a soap opera. It's like, you have the dramatic episode going on where we're losing $15 billion in business today. But that's not important right now because Frank is dating Michelle, who's dating Melissa. So heck about the,
Not Melissa.
And stay tuned tomorrow to see how that transpires. But this is the way that things are going now in government, is that... there's a lot going on, but people don't care, or they focus on the wrong thing. Go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. Is that people are not interested. If people don't listen to it. Don't. If they had a big news thing that delved into the program or delved into the news itself and gave it to you, people wouldn't watch. People would go away and go somewhere else. So, you know, the different news services or the different networks, they can't do that because they'd lose an audience. And they can't lose audience or they'd lose money. And, man, well, let me tell you, they're not going to lose money if they can help it. So, and I don't blame them, but the thing is, there's got to be a different way of going about this. And the only way you can really get, I think that you're right, that you can really get the full story and the complete story is by doing it online.
Well, that's true. Are you listening to the... Well, here's the thing. Like, I listen to a lot of talk shows when I get the opportunity to, and yeah, I'll admit it. I even listen to Rush Limbaugh, but I don't take any of them as gospel. But when I do bring up something, then I'll do my own research the best that I can. And the sad thing about it is a lot of people do take their favorite talk show host and they take it to take their word as Bible, and that's how they swing, for example.
And yeah, that's really too bad.
It's really too bad, and that's how some people wind up getting into office. Now, there are a lot of good people out there that would be really great, and some of them, they're not millionaires. They're not, what do I want to say? Our system is designed that unless you are, a rock star or have $1 million to spend to get into office, the really good people don't really, it's a battle to get into it. And so we wind up with what we got. And
yeah, and that's the thing. I was just thinking today there was a situation where people were saying that they don't like something that's going on. Well, if they don't like it, then raise the money and change it. Yeah, but you have to actually get involved. You actually have to do something. You know, it may not be that you have to literally go door to door, at least not physically. You could go door to door by computer if you want to. But it's still, you got to sit down and do something. You can't just sit there and it doesn't come to you.
Exactly. And like I said, in this age of communications, it's a lot easier to, to get together. And like the rallies that have been going to Washington, D.C., is an example. In fact, speaking of rallies, we have a phone call, by the way. So area code 541, welcome to the program.
Hello, program.
Hi, program.
This is Joe Ray Perkins, candidate for the U.S. Senate here in Oregon.
Hi, Joe Ray. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. So I understand that you're going to be talking a little bit about this $1.1 trillion spending bill.
Absolutely. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do have some. I have a lot of thoughts on that. Your other host, the other host that you're speaking to today, he mentioned about getting involved. We've got to stop this madness, and that's one of multiples of reasons of why I'm running for the U.S. Senate. This idea of having our senators and our representatives not reading the bills to a degree that they really know what's in it has got to stop. We cannot continue on with it.
Let me ask you, can I ask you a question? When you're going for U.S. Senate, how many people would you have working for you if you win U.S. Senate?
I can't answer that question. But enough that between myself and my staff, between myself and the staff, the bills will be read.
Right.
That's the thing. If you've got enough people there, you know, it's like 200 people that you've got working for you, that Senate, let's see, it may even be more than that in the Senate.
It's not that many people. Size of U.S. I knew it one time, but, you know, I read these things and I put them off to the side and it's like, well, when I need that information again, I'll look it up again.
Yeah, really. But the point is, you've got enough people there that they could break it up and they could read each individual thing. Each person could read it one different thing or whatever it takes, and then all you have to do is get a report. Could be condensed if you want it or whatever. About that, and I don't see why none of these senators or congressmen can get that in mind and think about that and read it and understand what's going on. I mean, that's what I thought your staff was for.
It is, and I have, and it's going to be a very easy promise for me to keep. The first promise, it all goes together, but it's really all one promise, is that myself and or my staff will read every bill before it's voted on. And if we do not have time to read it to a degree that's going to satisfy my test, it's going to be an automatic no vote. And here's the test. The first test, is that bill congruent with what the original intent of the founders was in writing the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights? That's the first test. The second test, and the second test I'm going to tell you before I tell you what it is, it's going to cause a no vote on almost every bill that comes before me, is that bill free of pork barrel spending and unrelated projects?
That's weird.
This idea of latching on bills and sneaking in projects, that would be akin to you going out and buying a car and you didn't read all the financing information in there and you didn't read all the add-ons and you find out that they added on there a insurance program, a mechanical breakdown program, tires that you have to pay for every year whether you need them or not.
And a dishwasher.
And a dishwasher. You know, you wouldn't do that. You just would not do that. And you wouldn't sign that contract no.
Yeah. And yet we're allowing this. We've talked about this. We've talked about this for years and years. It's not just recently, and yet no one does anything about it.
Well, this is why. Let me tell you the last part of my test. Is it fiscally conservative? We cannot afford this debt. It is unsustainable. It's been unsustainable. We are at 17.2 or 0.3 trillion dollars of debt. I'm waiting for the debt clock to pop up. 17.2 the other day. $17.334 trillion of debt. Let me put that in because your listeners out there, we talk about trillions like when we were kids, we would talk about gazillions. It means nothing. That is $54,614 of debt per citizen.
And that's including children.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my little granddaughter, who's almost five, just went running in front of me. Campbell has $54,614 of debt. So do my other nine grandchildren.
Wow.
That's not
so you better
clear.
Run out.
My husband. Huh?
You better run out and get them a job fast.
Yeah. And then they don't get to eat, right? You know, that's above the average income in the United States. That's our current debt. Future unfunded liability is, oh boy, we've been behind in my numbers, is now $127.4 trillion. What does that compose of? That is future Social Security, future prescription drug, future Medicare. That is, per taxpayer, $1.1 million per taxpayer.
Well, there's a point where I figure we're going to go bankrupt before we get too much further, and perhaps that's the wake-up call that we should have, the idea of the entire country, the federal government, going bankrupt, and that could be the entire thing that wakes us up to be more conservative.
It very well could be. And I have said, you know what, maybe that's what we need. But let me, and you mentioned a moment ago that this is not a new problem, but this is what happens. And people scratch their head because they don't get it. These polls are done. We hear these polls that Americans, you know, think that members of Congress, the House and Senate, are doing a lousy job. Yet, the reelection rate is in the 90 percentile. Why?
Yeah.
Because when you go to the polls, you go, oh, well, my senator, my representative is doing a good job. It's everybody else's. Well, the problem is you can't vote for everybody else's. So everybody is out there blaming everybody else and not holding their own elected officials that they can vote out of office accountable for their actions.
The thing is when you vote somebody new in there, you don't know what they're going to do. At least if you're voting the person, re-electing the person that's there, you have an idea of what they're going to do. Unless they're really doing something terrible, it's almost better to put them in, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. Einstein said the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results.
Yeah.
And this is,
well,
this
and
this
on
is
that
exactly
regard,
where we are.
Well, in that regard, like you say, what? Why do we keep putting these people back in? Why are we accepting, like, for example, the $1.1 trillion spending bill, which they're celebrating right now, had a 72-26 vote with all 53 Democrats voting in favor of it and 17 Republicans in favor of it. And we're just kind of like, okay, you know, we're accepting as norm that these people are, you know, why read the bill? You know, and we're not doing anything about it.
There's a disease in the United States. There's a disease in Washington, D.C. The disease is called go along to get along to continue on.
Oh, yeah.
And they're more concerned about the political machine to make sure that they get reelected, a lot of them, not all of them. But a lot of them, some of the 17 Republicans that backed the passage, and I honestly haven't read through the articles. They don't want to be faced with another government shutdown, quote unquote shutdown.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we all know because we've had the government shutdowns before, nothing happens.
Right. There's what we found is most. For the most part, the majority of people did not feel it. Now, I do know people that were affected specifically, and it was mostly people that were in the military that were between assignments.
Oh, yeah.
Where they had their assignments, but they weren't finalized yet, and so they didn't get their back pay because of the way that it's set up. So they actually were affected.
Well,
that's my campaign. Go ahead.
They didn't get it. Did they did not get it, or did they just get it late?
No, they did not get it. My campaign manager's husband is in the Army, and he was affected. They did not get the back pay because he was in between his assignments. Wrong.
I see.
But yeah,
well, see, that could be very upsetting.
Yeah, and he went in every day, and he worked. interesting,
well,
isn't it?
Yes. Again, yeah, there are some. Okay, see, again, I was in the military and could have been one of those people, but that's been a long time ago. And that's interesting. I did not know that. That's a thing to know. And a thing to consider because...
Well, when you think about the, you know, how we treat the people that have volunteered or not volunteered, but have gone into service and has offered to risk their lives for our freedom that we enjoy today, and we treat them the way we've been treating them, is just despicable, in my opinion.
It absolutely is. To think that we have our enlisted military men and women happen to be on food stamps. Really? Let's be on food stamps.
Wow.
And then and in order to have enough money to stretch. And then this last year, the government, one of their ways to, quote-unquote, save money is to start closing down the commissaries where they enjoy they get food at discount, supplies at discount, and that doesn't cost the government money. It's not
maybe
a
losing
proposition.
Maybe you can answer this question, is that we hear all the time, like, they're cutting back on, like you said, food stamps and other assistance. There's a constant battle over increasing unemployment benefits or the length of time for unemployment. And now there's a lot of cuts that affect the people directly, and we're constantly hearing that about the debt, the government debt, and how we can't afford to do this because we don't have the money, but yet we are giving away billions of dollars overseas to people that don't like us. But we don't have the money, so we borrow from China.
Right. So we borrow from the two countries that we have the most debt to is China and Japan. There's two ways.
I think that's because they let us. The other countries are smart. They've stopped letting us borrow.
Well, and there's two ways of looking at the foreign aid to those countries that don't like us. One of them is keep your friends close and your enemies closer. That's one school of thought. And I'm not saying I am not in 100% agreement with it, but there is a little bit of sense in that crazy line of thought. On the flip side of that, the fact that when we pull out of Afghanistan, the U.S. military is opting to leave billions, with a B as in Bravo, dollars worth of military equipment behind. The statement that I read last year, and I may be a little bit off on this number, because I'm pulling this out of my brain, out of the archives of the filing cabinet up there, around $2 billion, I think, is what I read, that the cost to remove that equipment. I say spend the money. That is one place where I want that money spent. I want that equipment pulled out of Afghanistan. Because you and I both know, as well as most of your listeners are going to agree, that that's going to fall into the hands of the Taliban or into others that would do us harm, and they will use that against us or allies. Why would we leave that there to fall into the hands of our enemy? That's
ridiculous. It's already been proven that our weapons have been used.
It's been proven. And there's more than $2 billion worth of military equipment there. So we flew it in, let's fly it out. To me, that's just pure insanity. They did the same thing in Iraq.
If we're worried about finding the money for doing this, let's just bring our troops home a few months earlier, and then we've got the money.
Yeah, we're not going to win in the Middle East. We need to protect Israel. I'm a huge supporter of protecting Israel. They have the right to the land that they're in. That is their land. As far as the other nations go, we're dealing with a tribal mentality, and we approach it with the Western mentality mindset. And it will not work. It's two different schools of thought, and the twain shall not meet.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I guess kind of speaking from how I can relate it is, you know, if going back to the overseas, give money overseas, is that how I can relate it is personally, let's say just to throw a number, let's say I take home $2,000 a month, I'm paying my taxes, I have a house and everything, but I'm watching every penny and barely making it from month to month to month, and having to look at doing cutbacks. But so the last thing that I'm going to do is go out and say buy a new car and take on a car payment, because you know when you do the budget, there is no money. You understand what I'm saying? So it's frustrating,
right?
When I hear like say locally here, for example, we hear it all the time in Eugene, Oregon, that we don't have the money for jails or for police. We're going to cut back on the fire department, but yet we somehow are able to go find $2-3 million to build a skateboard park, but we can't fix our roads. Does that make sense?
Different pools. Yeah, Robin, different pools of money. I'll pick on Albany since that's where I live. We have a skate park, and that money was actually raised privately. The kids went and have a skate park, and they went out and they raised that money, which was amazing.
Right.
But it still falls underneath the park. It's in a city park. So, but the city pretty much, they've said if you don't maintain it so that it's at safe conditions, then the city will close it off to where, you know, because they're going to make sure that it's safe because it is on city property. The money for streets is in a totally different pool of money. So it's the way that the budgets and laws have been passed, which is crazy. So money that is dedicated to streets cannot be pulled out and dedicated to parks. Well, the insanity of that is let's take our own personal budget. So we say, well, this is the money that I'm going to spend for my wardrobe. Oh, gosh, the dishwasher broke. I needed to get the dishwasher fixed. Well, I can't pull the money out of my wardrobe account. Who wouldn't pull the money out of their wardrobe account to fix their dishwasher?
Exactly. That's kind of my point.
Yeah. And it the businesses do not run their businesses that way. We don't run our personal budgets that way. The federal government, the state and city government, county governments, they've got to wake up and smell the coffee. And the only way we're going to do this is to get people involved, stop sitting around on Facebook and Twitter and complaining, put your boots on, and get out on the street.
Right.
Vote. Run for office.
Exactly.
Get on
and I think.
Pardon?
No, go ahead.
Get on school boards. See what committees are open at the city and county level. Get on the planning commission. Get on the bike commission. Get on the parks commission. Every city that I have ever seen. And I haven't looked at a whole lot of them, but when I'm out traveling around and I happen to see, you know, postings in different cities, it's, oh, we've got an opening on the Parks Commission. You're talking maybe once a month for a meeting, but you can have such a huge input. Local citizens being involved in local politics, you can make a lot of change out there. Now, some of us, like myself, feel that we are called to go to Washington, D.C., why would I choose that over the local politics? Because I know that there's people here locally that do a great job and can do a great job and are stepping up to be involved locally. But we've got to have somebody in Washington, D.C. who says, you know what, I'm not going to sit by and be quiet. We've got a job to do. Senator Merkley, who I plan on displacing, made a statement, and I was there in person. I actually have him recorded saying that his first 5 years in the Senate, he didn't do anything.
Okay.
And I thought to myself,
so think,
really, we're seeing, huh?
Well, I was going to say, and why doesn't that not surprise anybody?
Yeah. Well, my first thought is, great, we're paying you $174,000 a year to not do anything. My second thought was, thank you very much, I appreciate it. And I say that, in all sincerity, because I read the things that he wants to do, which is scary. But some of the things that he didn't do, he could have done. And I know I kind of switched topics on you, but I won't leave this out there hanging. Last year, the Congress passed a student loan bill and tied the interest rate of student loans to the 10-year Treasury. Well, this is what Senator Merkley said. He said, I'm going to propose a bill that da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
Really? Why didn't you propose the bill when the bill was in front of you? Why didn't you do it then? Because actually what he proposed, I think one of his people went onto my Facebook page and read what I had posted about student loans, because he said almost verbatim what I had been saying on student loans and how they should be handled, which is the federal government should not be making any money whatsoever off of student loans since they stripped it away from private enterprises, from the banking industry. The federal government, if they're going to manage student loans, should have enough to cover administrative costs, and that's it. And not make it.
I totally agree.
Not pay it back. And that's what I had put on my Facebook page months and months and months before he ever came out and said that. And I know his people were spying on me, so I'm not surprised. But that's okay. But this, we've got to start getting people to wake up. Listeners, please investigate the candidates. Don't read the bash pieces. Because I'll tell you, when I'm running against Merkley, they are not going to send out a piece that says nice things about me. They're not going to do it. They're only going to say stuff that's negative. That's what they're going to do. Go to my website, PerkinsForUSSenate.com. Read about me. Send me an email. I saw on the website, Robin, that you've got a place where they can ask me a question. And, Robin, you know me well enough. I will answer any question. I have nothing to hide.
Absolutely.
So,
and then we'll put that to our listeners as well. As Joe Ray has graciously offered to come on the program on a regular basis to answer your questions, which gives her an opportunity to elaborate more than just, you know, like on a Facebook page or whatever. So, again, if you have a question for Ms. Joe Ray Perkins, go to her campaign page, PerkinsForUSSenate.com, or you can email us, talk@caribbeanradio.com. And she's on Facebook, too, and she does answer the questions, so don't be afraid to ask her.
Yeah, let me close with, and I'll let you guys get back to talking about this insanity of what's being spent out there. I was on Facebook one day, and somebody wanted to friend me, and it was on my personal page. I had somebody that was a friend of a friend. Well, you know, I'll accept it. Well, the person says, oh, you're a Republican and I'm a Democrat. You're not going to like me. And, you know, she's sending me the private messaging on textbook, and it was, really? Why would you say that? And she says, well, Republicans and Democrats don't like each other. Really? Are you sure? She goes, well, you know, I'm for humanity, and I think we should take care of our fellow citizens. And Republicans don't do that. And I said, have you ever asked? Where are you getting this stuff? Well, we know that she was getting it from the media. And so I said, well, why don't you ask? And so she asked me a question. I answered her. And she replied, Dak, you answered. She said, I told you I'd answer you. She went, no, could she ask a second question? Well, of course. And I answered her. And she's going, you answered? Yes. Third question.
Yes.
Her reply was, oh, my gosh, you are a real, genuine person. You really do care. She's one of my biggest fans today. In fact, she changed her voter registration from Democrat to Republican so she can vote for me in the primary. And she works for the state of Oregon.
It's really too bad that the state of Oregon requires that you be a Republican or a Democrat. The state of Washington doesn't do that. Also,
I would
disagree
with you, and I'll tell you why. Because only two people get to go to the general election, they'd load up the votes and we'd never get a conservative on the ballot.
It
wouldn't happen. That's why I'm not open to, if there is a candidate, how do I say this? I'm actually the one that made the motion and passed at the Oregon Republican Party level I made a motion to allow for the non-affiliated voters to vote for a Republican in the primary when that Republican candidate was uncontested. And it actually passed. We knew the Democrat Party was not going to have time to pass the bill or to pass that and get it to Secretary of State's office. But Secretary of State's office did an end run around us, and he started to send out postcards to all the non-affiliated voters that were registered, and they had to opt in, which is slightly usurping her authority of what she could do, but she did it anyway. So it's a two-edged sword. If there's a candidate that you want to vote for and you're not registered as a Democrat or as a Republican in my case, re-register. Go online to Oregon Votes by April 20th. That's not the exact deadline, but it's close enough. A couple years ago, the Secretary of State's website, amazingly enough, had a malfunction on the final day of registration. So don't wait till the last day because it'll crash.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a problem with that lately.
Yeah.
Websites do have a limit.
Right.
Well,
so
let me throw
you
a question
sure,
out there.
Oh, go ahead, Robin.
I was going to say, let me throw a question out there. Let's say, you know, you do become U.S. Senator and you're going up against all these Democrats, for example, and unfortunately it's becoming really Democrats against Republican or Ford or Chevy, depending how you want to look at it. But, you know, all the
I think that's one of the problems that we have is people have broken this whole thing down to Democrats and Republicans instead of thinking of them as people,
right.
And they are people, and you got to continue to consider that fact that they are people, and that's why I was a little upset that you say we have to, you know, change our affiliation. Let's say I wanted to vote for all of the Democrats except for you. And I want to vote for you. How do I do that?
In the primary, you can't. In the general, it's open.
That's my problem.
The general election is open. And it is just the way that it is. The bottom line is the majority of people fall in one of two camps. There are degrees within those camps. For example, I'll use a good football analogy. U of O, OSU. My husband and I root for both teams. Until they play each other. Then we vote for the Heavers. Sorry, Duck fans. We live in Albany. I just graduated from OSU. But let me redeem myself. One of our grandchildren, his name is Otson, named after Eugene, after Otson Stadium in Eugene. So, but we believe in rooting for both teams. But there's an analogy that, yes, we want to support them both, but when it comes down to we got to pick one, you know, that we're going to really cheer on, then we have to make, you know, a silly analogy, I know, but we're going to make a decision of who do we want to see win more. And that's what you have to do at the poll sometimes, at the ballot box. You have to say, well, who do I want to see win more? What's more important to me? Is this person running uncontested in the primary, or they have a really strong opponent, and I'm pretty sure this other person is going to win. And that's where people need to be educated. But I really encourage people to get to know who their candidates are, find out about them, find out, do they align with your core values? If they don't align with your core values, the core of really who you are and on how you see things, then you need to really consider, is that a person I want to vote for?
On that same token, is you're going up against a mindset that you know, people will say anything that they want to say to get elected and want in there. They can do anything they want to do, and the Democrats, to put it on them, are not representing the people. You know, like for example, the Obamacare, it's got problems. Maybe they had good intentions, but it's got problems, and they're just not willing to deal with it. The recent vote on the $1.1 trillion, like, yay, we'll get to spend more money. But how do you go up against that mindset that they seem to be more for their own personal projects than they are really, which doesn't seem like the best interest for the country? You'd be like the Lone Ranger in a way.
You are. And here's the thing, and I'll read you this quote. I was doing a little bit of research the other day. What's the difference between a politician and a statesman or a stateswoman? I consider myself to be a stateswoman. A politician follows the crowd. He or she lives and dies with their finger in the wind. Politicians maintain the image of leadership. A statesman or a stateswoman leads. A statesman doesn't bow to the screeching and railing that often passes for opposition. The statesman follows the path blazed by John Adams, who said, always stand on principle, even if you stand alone. That's the difference.
Very good.
Sometimes you have to stand alone. I'm going to let you guys go. I need to go back to being grandma and get some dinner made for my grandkids. And I appreciate everything that you're doing out there. Keep up the good work.
What are you having for dinner?
I think they're having turkey burgers.
I'm all for that. I'll come over.
It's my daughter left in the fridge. Again, if people want to know more about me, you can go to my website, perkinsforusbennett.com, and there's a contact link in there, and they can send an email, and we definitely will respond, and they can go to they can find me somewhere on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Have a great evening.
And Joe Rage, thank you so much for coming on, and we look forward to doing it again.
Yes, thank you.
All right, sounds good. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Interesting. She's got some great ideas and some great opinions, and be interesting to hear from her again someday and get some more information of what she thinks out of the whole thing. But it sounds to me like she's definitely got her mindset in the right place.
Exactly. And what she was saying about answering questions, I have met with her in person several times, and she is very open. I really believe in my heart that she's a good, honest person, and that's why I was kind of saying earlier, it's the good people that are the underdogs that go up against the political norm, which makes it really hard. Once the media says, we like you, we don't like you, so we're not going to invite you to any of the debates or anything like that, so it doesn't matter how great you are, you just don't fit into our criteria of who we're going to support.
Well, by the way, if you are a person who is running against her, you can give us a call at 646-721-9887, and we'd be more than happy to put you on the air, and you can give your opinion if it's different than the opinion that we just heard, 646-721-9887. And if you want, right at the moment, you probably might not want to come on because you don't have as long to talk. But if you want a longer period of time, call us next week, and we'd be more than happy to put you on at that particular time. But, again, it's wide open for anybody who wants to come on and voice an opinion, 646-721-9887.
And on the same token, if you are a supporter or have an opinion, again, give us a call, 646-721-9887. And as always, if you're listening to us on the archives, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And again, we hope to have Ms. Perkins on more often, and as well as other candidates. But as I feel that this is going to be a very interesting election, we need to get good people in there. We need the norm of, it's okay to not read the bill and pass it has got to stop, people. And we got to get people in there who can actually are willing to stand up. No more used car salesmen coming out saying, if you elect me because I feel the same way, fill in the blank, you do, and they're just self-serving. Like for example, Joe Ray is running against Jeff Merkley. Merkley. It's funny, once you say something bad, you can't say it right.
Yeah.
Merkley was one of the Obamacare supporters. In fact, there's a video out on YouTube right now where he was having a little town hall meeting, and a small businessman brought that up about how the insurance is killing his bottom line, and he's going to have to stop providing insurance for his 12 employees. And Merkley's response was, well, let me give you the number of the person in the Oregon cover organ exchange. And then he went on with this BS about how great the Obamacare thing is and missed the whole point. The businessman was saying point blank, my costs went up 43%. You know, this is what a lot of people's costs are doing. They're going up 200-300% on health care because of this insurance thing. And as he pointed out in the video, the business owner, you don't have a choice really of what type of coverage that you can have. You know, where before Obamacare, if you want to go in for just basic life, you know, with a high deductible, fine. If you want to go in with if you can afford better insurance with lower deductible, fine. You had that choice. If you don't want to have pregnancy coverage, especially like Cliff, I don't think he's going to get pregnant anytime soon.
Probably not.
But you never.
I'm too old.
Too old. Yeah, that's the deal. He's too old. But why should Cliff have to pay for that coverage for himself when it's never going to happen? But that's the way the system is set up right now. That's why they're screaming right now that, oh my God, these young people are not signing up for health care, and we're going to bankrupt. There's already news that Obamacare is already going to be bankrupt because there's not enough money because, hey, guess what, people? The people that actually need insurance are signing up for it, and the people that don't need insurance are not. Gosh, go figure.
Again, we've got a president that's waited until it was passed before he started to discuss it and bringing out all of the things that were not going to work, things that he had to have known weren't going to work, or as I mentioned many, many times, he's too dumb to know. He doesn't understand. Even his own bill, he doesn't understand. He didn't write that bill. He didn't have anything to do with writing that bill. So consequently, he doesn't understand what it says or what its ramifications are. Once he's been out here and started talking about it, he's realized some of the ramifications of what's going on and how much it's going to cost people and how much it is costing people already. And it's going to be more in the next year because it's going to go up. And it's going to put people out of business. It's going to put people out of work. It has to already done both of those things to a certain extent, but a small bit. But it's going to get worse and worse. And the whole thing, I don't know if it can even exist because it could be the thing that bankrupts America.
Oh, and that's exactly what I think is going to happen, is that, you know, as I've mentioned many times, and even on the just recently, is that people don't, if it doesn't affect people directly, you know, if it's not, I mean, like football or TV or their monthly bills, if it doesn't affect people directly, they don't care. Like Joe Ray was mentioning, you know, giving the example of the $1 trillion or $1 billion, how it's going to relate. I cannot relate to that. I'd love to billion dollars. I can't tell you how many. I'd have to look it up to really tell you exactly how many zeros are in a billion. But how does that relate to me on a day-to-day basis? You know, the Senate passed a $1.1 trillion spending bill. Okay, whoopee, what's on the TV tonight? I don't care. I don't know anything about it. You know, the ramifications of how it's actually going to affect us tax-wise and everything else, right now, I don't care.
Really?
That's the way most people think. I don't care. But as I predicted, or in predicting, you know, this year is when the Obama penalties start coming due. And starting off at $95 and incrementing up till 2016, where it gets up into the thousands. This, you're already starting to hear people screaming that their insurance has doubled and tripled. Where before then, they're going, the attitude was, well, you know, everybody really needs to have insurance. And that's all they knew. They never read or even considered what was involved. They just went by what they were told, either by Obama, who promised that if you like your insurance, you can keep your insurance. And they fell for the sound bites as he's still promoting Obamacare to try and convince people it's a good thing, which should be a warning to begin with. But people fell for the sound bites, and other than that, they really didn't care until it hits home.
And it's going to start hitting home very soon. And when it hits home, then we're going to get more and more people. But are they actually going to do something, or are they going to let it? You know, it's coming to the point where the scary thing is going to take place. The entire country is going to go bankrupt. And when that happens, that's going to make a huge difference in what, you know, is taking place with your money. And it's just, you know, people with money, even not very much money, but enough people that had money in the stock market or money in the bank, that just a little tidbit of an idea of an inkling of what happens to that happened in 2008, and consequently people lost money. A lot of people lost money. I didn't have very much money in a savings account, but yet I lost money.
Right.
And I waited. You know, I lost half of what I had in there, which was not very much, but it was, you know, $500 I lost. And so consequently, big deal, but to me it was.
Well, $500 is a lot of money to you and me.
That's right.
In fact, I wanted to kind of also bring on an issue of speaking of federal government. During the shutdown, the federal government, and this wasn't really covered as heavily in the news as it should have, flexed its muscles by, because we've had threats of shutdown before. We've had threats even locally, state and local governments threatening to, you know, cut back services, like cutting back police, which, great, you don't notice it unless you need them. But what the federal government did is that they barricaded parks. They prevented people from going on public lands. They've actually, you know, came out and you know, flex their muscles a little bit by going, we own you. You don't own us. Yes, these are federal lands, but if you don't pass our bills, you're not going to be able to access your own lands anymore. This is federal property. You know, so this is how much control we have over you. And if you don't follow our way, you know, it was a more in-your-face type of a deal than what's been done before to get people to push their congressmen and you know, vote to pass the budget, because I'm not going to give it all on Obamacare. I want this budget passed. We've got to avoid this shutdown, which they did at the last minute again. Whoopee, you know, well, like we knew that didn't happen. It wasn't going to happen. But, you know, the federal government was actually coming out and saying, you know, we do have a lot of power over you, and we are in control, and you guys have no say in it.
Well, that's where we've got to change things as far as senators and congressmen as to their tax methods. They've got to pay things the same as we do. In other words, if we the people are going to lose money, they should be losing exactly the same amount. And it shouldn't be different for them than it is for everybody else. And we've got to change that. And who's bringing that up? Who's saying that? Who's doing anything about it?
Well, there are a few people that are bringing it up, just like a few talks about impeachment. And there's been a lawsuit, we talked about that in last week's program, to make people in Congress and their staff where they have to sign up for the exchange. In other words, like the proposed 28th Amendment about, you know, the people that make the rules also have to follow the rules.
Yeah, that's right. And yet we don't do that. We're sitting down here. You know, that 28th Amendment thing, that's been on the website, on the Internet forever. I mean, what, four or five years? And yet we haven't had a bigger following for that and to try to get it passed. Well, and it could happen.
Yeah, well, it really wasn't until this year, really. You start seeing more and more protests in front of Washington, D.C. You know, you had the Truckers for Constitution and the bikers and several other groups going there. The sad thing about it, the people in the White House and our representatives know these are weekend warriors. They're going to come up. They're going to do their rally. Yay, 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 we against this. And they're going to go home and back to their little lives and just totally ignore them, and the peasants will go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I mean,
and the thing is, we have been going away.
Yeah, and think about it. You know, like I was saying earlier about the lavish lifestyle of, in fact, this is, you know, more in your face, that the Obamas have done, I think, more than any other candidate. Like, for example, Michelle spending over 2 weeks at Oprah Winfrey's place in Hawaii, which has been causing real havoc in that neighborhood because of Secret Service and everything else in there, plus the fact it's costing us over $200,000 for her visit. Do you think that before the Obamas got elected that Oprah would give them the time of day, much less have her come over to her house for 2 weeks?
No.
Right.
They're enjoying the people that are inviting the president in they don't care the fact that he's Barack Obama or Michelle Obama. All they care about, hey, guess what? We have the president here. And they're sucking it up.
Well, you've got to have some benefits of being the president.
But there's a point. You know, like I say, we're having to keep voting more and more money in you know, to run the government, another $1.1 trillion. Where does it stop? Where's the money coming from? Well, let's borrow it from China, from Japan, or from whatever. And on the other side of the coin, let's go ahead and spend $200,000 on a vacation. Let's go ahead and send three Air Force aircraft to go out on vacation, one for the president, one for his wife, and one for his dog. What the hell? You know, it's an endless pot.
Actually, there was another one. There's one for the vehicles.
Yeah, one for the vehicles. Because, yeah, that's what people don't really realize. Wherever the president goes, there's an entourage of aircraft. They have to bring, you know, Bumblebee number one out to wherever it's going, and the Secret Service that comes out, you know, a couple of weeks ahead. It's a whole whoop-de-doo. It's not, you know, when the president kind of goes, well, I'm going to go to Seattle, you know, for this. Well, there's a lot of arrangements that takes effect weeks beforehand, and
including closing half the roads.
Exactly.
I mean, it makes a big mess out of things, no matter where he goes, and no matter when he goes. So yes, it's a huge amount of money. There's a tremendous amount of money spent every time the president goes anywhere, and he's constantly going somewhere.
Right, at our dime.
Oh yes, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, if I'd like to sit down, and I suppose I can figure out where it is and go online and find it, but I don't have time now. But the point is to go somewhere and find out how much money he spends on transportation. And that's all ultimately all the transportation, him and his dog and his vehicles and so on.
Well, look, speaking of dog, his dog handler, okay, well, the dog's handler, not his dog handler, who knows, gets paid over $100,000 a year to take care of the first dog.
Well, of course. That's an important dog.
It is.
Yeah.
At least one thing that is definite, that handler definitely has to take care of the dogs, fill in the blank.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't mind spending money on that, but the thing is we should understand that there's a lot of things like that. You see, it's a pittance, just a pittance. That's just a small, small, small amount of how much money. The thing is, we spend lots of sections, lots of pieces of that, and you put all those pieces together, and they become real money.
Well, that gets back to my example, like we were talking with Joe Ray Perkins. From our point of view, if I have $1,000 or $100, am I going to buy food or am I going to go out and buy new clothes? What's more important when that's all the money that I have? The way the government is set up, and well, actually, the way government's set up, you know, it's budgeted for this, not for that. You know, if you need them, like for example, if your microwave or dishwasher goes out, and you have a budget for clothing, well,
you know, there is a point where you've got to consider this. A lot of people will say, well, I'll spend the money on clothes. And then when it comes around to needing the money and the fact that they haven't had anything to eat and they really haven't had anything to eat, then they go sign up for welfare and the government pays for it.
Right. Or they start doing that, okay, well, yes, the dishwasher broke down. I still want these clothes. I have credit cards. Let me go max out my credit card. Oh, look, I just got another credit card in the mail. Next thing you know, you're $40,000, $50,000 in debt to credit cards. And the funny thing about those credit cards is that these guys like to get paid. But now you've already exceeded your monthly payments and minimum payments, and you can't afford to pay it. What happens?
You declare bankruptcy.
You declare bankruptcy, which is...
And again, the government pays for it.
The government pays for it, but you can only do that once. But either way, and it ruins your credit, and things are... Trust me, I know this from experience. It's not a fun deal to go through. But I can't go to my credit card companies and say, you know, I'm maxed out on my limit. I really can't afford to make the payments, but can you go ahead and raise my limit by another X amount? And they'll look at me and go, yeah, right.
Well, you say you can only do it once. Once you've done it once, then what do? Then you go on welfare again. We're back to that.
Yeah, we're back to that, back to the government dole. But, again, where does that money come from?
Well, that money comes from you and me who pay the taxes.
Right, exactly. So that's what I'm saying is that, as far as money being spent, you and I, on a limited income per se, are not going to go out and buy a brand new car because we can't realistically afford it. We'd love to have the latest and greatest with all the gadgetries and everything else in it. I mean, who wouldn't? But when you have a limited amount and you got to pay for housing and food and basic expenses, smart people are not going to go out and waste money that's not there.
Hopefully.
But our system of government, just like with the spending bill, especially when, again, all 53 Democrats, we didn't read the bill. Let's go out and vote for it anyways. It's a whole whopping 1,582 pages. Why read the bill? It's too damn long.
Okay, we've got the Senate being voted on this particular 2014. Who are we replacing, and how many are we replacing? And should we perhaps look into what they think and what they believe in before we decide to replace them? And then perhaps we should look into what the people who are in place in that particular office already, what do they believe in? What do they think? Maybe we should leave them in there. I mean, let's pay attention to what the people we're replacing, what their philosophy is and what their ideas are. Let's not vote for Democrats or Republicans anymore. Let's stop doing that. Let's vote for people.
Exactly, and that's really an excellent point, is that I've heard many times that somebody will say, "Oh, you're always picking on Obama because he's a Democrat. You damn Republicans." I agree with you 1,000%. And that's the way I try to do. I try to look at the people. But even what I'm doing now, like Jeff Merkley, his little response to that businessman, is I'm trying to read more between the lines, listening to what he says and how he says it. When somebody just says, "Well, I could refer you to this, but, trying to pay attention to the salesman-type attitude and listen to see if people are honest and open for taking questions. I mean, that's one of the things that impressed me every time I talk with Joe Ray Perkins, that, even if I don't agree with her, at least she is honest enough, I feel, to give me her opinion. Now, and of course, if she does get elected or anybody get elected, on us, the voters, we need to hold their feet to the fire. We're not going to be Mr. Nice Guy and go, "Okay, yeah, I love this person. I want to vote for this person because they're a nice person." Okay, well, that's part of it. But the other part is, are you going to follow through? Are you just giving me a line of bull, or are you actually going to come out? Now, granted, I'll give them credit that, some of them will come out with really great intentions. They want to make this change. They want to make that change. And they're very sincere about it. But once they get in, they find out that, you're only one against 53, or you're one against 200 and some odd. But if you try to get in there and try to change it from the inside, I can respect that. But if you're going to be one of the ones that like the 53 Democrats, it just blindly says, "Okay, yeah, I haven't read the damn thing, but I'm going to vote for it anyways."
Then you need to have somebody read it for you. You've got a whole staff there that can read it for you. That's the beginning. And your staff, you need to make sure that your staff is your staff, so that you can trust them and understand what they say. So they, when they do read something, and then they explain it to you or read it for you or tell you about it, you can believe what they're saying. That's important. And it's not something that you see. I don't vote for Republican or Democrat. I don't really care what they are. I vote for the person. And when I call the president stupid, I'm not calling the Democrat stupid. I'm calling the president, specifically a person, stupid. And I think he is. And consequently, that's a different thing. I'm not passing that on as Republicans or Democrats. I'm not even considering that fact, Republicans or Democrats. I'm considering the intelligence, intelligence of that person and what they think and what they don't think. And that's important that you find out. And you can find that out by going to the person's website or writing to most of these people. If you go to their website, they'll have an address there, and you can write to them or email them. And almost all of these people will email you back and inform you. The thing is, when you think about it, I look at the president and I watch him on TV and I listen to what he says, but I don't pay attention. I do pay attention but most of the time he's lying. He almost every time he has something that he's lying about. And consequently, I'd rather follow on in the news and follow the information and see what he does, not what he says.
And that gets back to, like you say, he lost his credibility. And the media is now starting to very slowly come out and emphasize that point. You know, like on talk shows the other night, the congressman during one of the Obama speeches a couple of years ago that got up and said, "You're lying!" And he had to apologize to the president. Now maybe the president should apologize to the congressman because he was lying. He is lying. His record shows that he's lying. Why are we, if it's anybody else, they'd be screaming for impeachment. Look what damage you have done to the country. We should be working on getting rid of you. Instead, we're all being taken to the cleaners and being billed for it.
Yeah, really. Exactly. It's really sad to think that because you mentioned these people who are spewing information about themselves before they're elected, and then when they are elected, find out that isn't them. Now, there can be a couple of reasons why. For one thing, once you get into the office and you find out what the office means and what you have an ability to do, that can change your way of thinking because perhaps you can't do what you would like to do. There are the people telling you you can't. But there's so many times it's just people spew out gobs of information that means nothing, and then they get elected, and then they got to figure out what to do. And
nothing, like Joe Ray pointed out.
Yeah, really, that's unfortunate.
And here's the thing, like I said, Jeff Cruz as an example. You know, yes, one person can't really. I think it was Jeff Cruz that did the filibustering recently. Anyways, I may have the name wrong, but the whole point is that somebody got up there in front of Congress and they filibustered for a record 20 hours or something like that. Although it didn't have, it didn't change anything. The point is, he tried. You know, you have the internet now. You have the, every congressman, senator, or whatever has their own official page. You have, even though for two-way conversations, you got, your Twitter, your Facebooks, or whatever. And yes, unlike what Knight Rider says, one man can make a difference. In a way, they can. If you develop that trust in the fact that you are trying to do something and you're being honest.
As I remember, when they started doing that, when someone would get up and speak and speak and speak, C-SPAN would put them on the air.
Right.
But they aren't doing that anymore. Nowadays we sort of expect it, and it's not a big thing. And so our way of meeting the public and the way we accept it and do things has changed. So we need to find out a way to make that more of an impact so that we know what's going on, because some people have something to say.
By the way, that was Ted Cruz, not Jeff Cruz, that did the filibustering.
People forgive you.
Yes, I hope so. They're both in public office. But that's the whole point. You can rally people behind you if you stay in communication with them, you respond to them. I can't remember who it was, I wrote my representative one time, and what I got back was a form letter that wasn't even, you know, thanking me for the letter and blah, blah, blah. They're looking into this. It had nothing to do with what I wrote them. All they did was just, you know, shut off a photocopy of something, of a basic form letter, and said, here you go. I mean, I don't expect, because of the amount of mail and everything they get for the representative to personally respond to each letter. They don't have the time. That's why they have the staff. But if what was insulting is that it wasn't even related to what I was asking, and all it was a campaign letter back. It's
well,
like,
the staff could at least respond.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the staff, and they aren't using them. Or, and well, for that matter, I think perhaps the staff is probably going out to lunch.
Well, in fact, what has satisfied me is, like, say, if it was Senator Smith, just to make up a name, if they would have wrote back and said, yes, Senator Smith feels this way about it or doesn't feel this way about it, but thank you for your letter, and we are forwarding this on to him, or we are adding this to his tally, or something in that regard, I would have felt, you know, hey, I took the time to write. You know, just like a business. When I owned a business, when a customer took the time to call, or more importantly, when they took the time to write, that, you know, puts it at the top of the stack.
Well, and you say that they didn't make an effort. If they have that many people writing to them, probably about a bunch of them will be writing about the same subject. Give all the same answers. You know, send the same letter as an answer to all of them, and explain to them that this other people wrote about this particular subject, and this was the answer we gave them. You don't have to write a specific letter for each individual person, so it doesn't need to take that much time. And for that matter, they should have somebody assigned to take care of that sort of thing. They've got a larger number of people than I think people understand, and so consequently, they've got a big staff.
Exactly. And speaking of staff, as we're just about out of time, again, I want to take a moment to thank Ms. Jo Rae Perkins, who is running for U.S. Senate for Oregon on the Republican side, for taking the time out to give us a call. And she will, if you have questions for her, she has expressed interest in coming on the program when her time allows, hopefully on a weekly basis, if we can swing that. But again, if you have questions for her that you would like her to respond to, send her go to her website, perkinsforussenate.com. You can send her an email there. Find her on Facebook as well. Or you can send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, and we'll be more than happy to forward your questions to her, and we'll take the top questions and have her on the air, either live or on an off-time interview, again, depending on her schedule. But again, you know, this is a great opportunity. If there's a question that you have for somebody running for Senate that you'd like to know, and if you can't be there in person, this is an excellent opportunity, and write her and thank her for appearing on the program and encourage her to come on more often.
Absolutely. We certainly do thank her for coming on, and we'll be happy to hear from her again. So it's about time that we quit now.
It is.
And by the way, the gross national debt is now $17,277,853 and on.
It's a lot of bottles.
Yeah.
That we are on Saturdays, 4 o'clock Pacific time. As always, anything's open as far as topic-wise. Send us emails on talk@krbnradio.com and try and find us on Facebook. We are there, believe it or not. You can get to it from our link on our homepage. And we'll be back again next Saturday, 4 o'clock Pacific time. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.